In 2010, the Democratic incumbent for Iowa's 1st District defeated his Republican challenger by a mere 4,000 votes. This hour, a debate between the two in their 2012 rematch. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Congressman Bruce Braley and his Republican challenger Ben Lang are with me in Iowa Public Radio's Cedar Falls studio. And also joining me to help pepper our candidates with questions, James Q. Lynch, political reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, and Iowa Public Radio's Pat Blank. We hope you'll join in with your questions this hour. 1-866-780-9100. Our email, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. or via Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. We get started right after this hour's news. This is River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer, and today a special edition of Politics Day on our program. With less than a month before the November 6th elections, the two candidates of the major parties vying for the right to represent Iowa's 1st Congressional District have joined me in Iowa Public Radio's Cedar Falls studio. Now, we're all getting familiar with the new 1st District. It's comprised of roughly the northeast section of Iowa, including not only the cities of Cedar Falls, Waterloo, also up to the northeast, Dubuque, up to Decorah, Marshalltown as well, down to the south to Linn County, Cedar Rapids, of course, there on the district's southern border. And our two candidates, the incumbent Congressman Bruce Braley of the Democratic Party, has served three terms since first being elected in 2006. Congressman Braley, welcome.
Thanks, Ben. It's great to be here.
His challenger is Republican Ben Lang, an attorney from Independence. Mr. Lang, welcome.
Thanks for having us on, Ben.
Also joining me in the studio in Cedar Falls to help out with some questions, James Q. Lynch, political reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette. James, welcome.
Good day.
And our own Pat Blank of Iowa Public Radio. Hi, Pat.
Hi, good to be here.
We hope our listeners will also join in this hour to ask your questions of our candidates. You can do that in one of many ways. 1-866-780-9100 is our toll-free number, 1-866-780-9100. Email rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're on Facebook, or you can also tweet us at IPR Talk. A few words to explain our hour. Each of the candidates will have a couple of minutes to answer a question directed at them. I'll give you, Congressman and Mr. Lang, a visual signal. I have a little stopwatch here when you reach the two-minute mark, and then you'll know you'll have to wrap it up very quickly, or if you go too much over that, I'll interrupt you. None of the questions, to make it clear, none of the questions have been shared with our candidates beforehand. There will also be time for you to give a brief response, a rebuttal, if you wish, to your opponent's answer. And you're going to give me a little visual cue if you'd like to do that. Overall, of course, we're striving to give you both a fair hearing on each of the issues, a worthwhile exchange of ideas, so that our listeners can judge for themselves where you differ. And I've heard in recent days this is easier said than done, but let's go ahead right now. opening statements, we will have a two-minute opening statement from each of our candidates, and prior to going live on air, we had a toss of the coin, and Mr. Lang, you won that toss of the coin, so you elected to go first with your two-minute opening statement. Please go ahead.
Well, first of all, Ben, thanks for having us on, and thank you to Iowa Public Radio for hosting this. You know, Ben, we're running for Congress, my family and I, because politicians of both parties haven't been honest to us. They haven't told us the truth. That's why Congress has a 13% approval rating. We're not surprised about that. And frankly, everyone in Iowa agrees Washington's broken. And Congressman, frankly, your policies are part of the problem. You went into Washington saying that the national debt was your highest priority, and yet you've nearly doubled it under your watch. You went into office saying that you wanted to have a full and frank discussion on health care, and we saw how that took place with the 2,700 pages being crammed through in the middle of the night. You know, you went into Washington saying that you wanted to end the cozy relationships with lobbyists, and yet you've accepted thousands of dollars of contributions from them. And you said you wanted to be an independent voice, and yet you voted 98% in line with your party this last session. And you continue to say one thing and do another, and I think that's why Iowans are so frustrated with politicians from both parties and the impact that it has on them. And these just aren't votes, Ben. These are important policies that are crushing Iowa families out there. Right now, we went from $29,000 per person of debt to $53,000 in debt under the congressman's watch. You know, he supported an Obamacare piece of legislation that has taken funding from Medicare, $716 billion from Medicare. And that's going to have an impact on senior citizens out there. My father, you know, he turned 62, and he's soon going to be relying upon not just Social Security, but also Medicare in the future. We need to strengthen and preserve those programs because physicians out there are saying, look, we're going to restrict access to care because of the cuts that are made in provider payments through the Obamacare legislation. And not only that, these policies are also impacting the working class families out there, like where I'm from Quasquetin, Iowa, you know, where we get up and we go to work every single day. The fact that he supported a cap and trade policy that's necessarily going to increase energy costs here in Iowa, those have real world impacts on all of us. And it's not just enough to sit up here and attack your opponent, because I also think folks in Iowa want leadership. They want somebody that has an idea out there that they're willing to stand for. That's why we put up our Compact with Iowans, talking about resolving the national debt crisis, unleashing the private sector economy, reforming health care the right way. And I hope we have an opportunity to discuss those plans here.
Mr. Lang, thank you very much. To Congressman Bruce Braley for your opening statement, please.
Well, Ben, I appreciate KUNI and Iowa Public Radio giving us a chance to talk to the voters about some of the stark differences between us in this election. You know, voters are going to find out that Ben and I have a few things in common. We both grew up in small towns. We both love baseball. We both went to law school. We both have three children that we love and that we're concerned about their future. But we have stark differences in what we think should be done to protect and preserve the middle class. I grew up in the middle class. This country is at its best when the middle class is at its strongest. And I support policies that are going to continue tax breaks for the middle class while asking those people who are doing really well in this economy to pay a little bit more. My opponent wants to give everybody a tax break and add $850 billion of additional deficit that he claims he cares about. I support policies that are going to strengthen the safety net of Medicare. In fact, I fought during the healthcare debate to make sure that Iowa hospitals and physicians got more equitable payment. That's why they gave me awards. And quite frankly, Ben, that's why they both are supporting me in this election. That's why the American Hospital Association and the Iowa Medical Society, which represent Iowa's physicians, are supporting me, not Ben. And I fought to make sure that the guaranteed safety net of Social Security is strengthened and protected. Ben wants to eliminate one of the legs of the three-legged retirement security stool by getting rid of the guarantee of Social Security benefits and push people into the risky private investment market. I'm one of those people he's talking about because I'm one of those people who's paid into Social Security and Medicare for 40 years. He wants to eliminate the safety net that I paid into for 40 years and put me into the risky private marketplace and give people vouchers for Medicare. He doesn't support bringing our troops home from Afghanistan right now. I think that's a high priority this country. It would help reduce the deficit by $100 billion each year, and we could invest that money in America and improve the middle class. That's why I'm running for re-election.
Thank you, Congressman Bruce Braley. It occurred to me that we do have two Bens in this room during this. So I will call you Ben Lang. I will call you Mr. Lang. And you may call me Ben, of course, as well. Let's go to the first questions. Thank you for those opening comments from Congressman Bruce Braley and Ben Lang in this debate. You both touched on the topic of jobs, so let's go there first of all. And Rockwell Collins has announced a possible reduction in workforce of about 1,000 jobs over the next fiscal year and attributes about 350 of those to budget sequestration. This is the automatic across-the-board spending cuts. The company has had several rounds of layoffs over the past year. Congressman Braley, what can you do as a member of Congress to help this major employer of the First District get back on track?
Well, Ben, budget sequestration was a bad idea when I voted against it along with every other member of the House delegation from Iowa. It created an artificial committee called a super committee and tasked it with trying to find these budget cuts. It failed. Now we're facing across the board dramatic cuts in defense spending and domestic spending. That's why I oppose sequestration. A lot of people don't even understand how it's going to function. But the bottom line is Congress needs to get its act together. And that's why I supported the No Budget, No Pay Act. a provision that says if you don't get a budget passed on time, you don't get to draw your congressional pay. Both Democrats and Republicans have signed on to that bill because it's one way of forcing Congress to do its job. I've already voted for $3 trillion in spending cuts, so it's not a matter of what those cuts are. It's a matter of priorities. And one of the things we have to do for those employees at Rockwell Collins is to come up with targeted spending cuts in federal programs that are either unnecessary or don't return value to this country. And that's why I voted against a second engine for the Joint Strike Fighter airplane that we were being asked to support, even though the Pentagon itself didn't want it. By reducing spending for things like unnecessary tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires that are going to blow a hole in the deficit. So we have ways that we can find spending cuts, but we can't just ignore that we also need revenues in order to get out of this hole. And many of the colleagues I work with, including colleagues that are supporting Ben Lange in this election, refuse to look at a balanced approach to solving our deficit. That has to change, and every economist who looks at this question knows it has to change. And the people working at Rockwell Collins and Cedar Rapids are depending on us to come together and solve these tough problems.
Ben Lange, you had a response to Congressman Braley.
Well, certainly. I think we first need to realize that Americans are hurting out there. 23 million Americans are struggling to find work. Over half of the college graduates that graduate today are struggling to find work. I mean, the policies are what's causing this. And the creation of the policies that Congressman Braley is supporting is what is causing this position. You know, I had an opportunity to visit Rockwell a couple months ago, and understanding their role when it comes to providing jobs and opportunities for everyone here in Iowa. But they are in a position now that these contracts are being cut because of the debt that we are facing as a nation. And the reason we have such a high debt is because of the spending, the four consecutive trillion-dollar deficits that my opponent has been behind for the past 4 years. That is what Washington has caused, and now we are facing the brunt of that. And when it comes to jobs and opportunities, I think we have to have a full and frank discussion on it, that the small business owner out here in Waukon, Iowa, over to Grinnell, down to Independence, in Cedar Rapids, those are the people that are risking their capital on the line. And the policies that the congressman is talking about, increasing taxes on them, you're taking the dollar out of their hand because you want to send it to Washington, D.C. And I just wholeheartedly disagree on where that dollar should be spent. I have more confidence in the business owners here in Iowa.
Well, and Ben, if I may respond to that, that's why the business owners in Iowa are very proud of the fact that I introduced the Back to Work Act that created tax incentives to get 100,000 Iowa employees back to work who didn't have a job. And that's why they are happy that I introduced the Support Our Startups Act to give tax credits to small businesses who struggle in that first year of paying for the startup costs of their businesses, and my Main Street Stabilization Act, which I've introduced, which is going to make sure that we don't have the high rate of small business failures that hurts our economy.
Okay, let's perhaps stay on this general topic and go over to James Q. Lynch of the Gazette for perhaps a follow-up. James.
I just wanted to ask both of you, although the unemployment rate appears to be headed in the right direction, is there a need for another round of stimulus that's targeted directly at job creation? The president has talked about perhaps investing in infrastructure, building roads, doing those sorts of public infrastructure improvements. Any support there for further stimulus?
Should we start off with Mr. Lange this time?
I certainly don't think there's another support out there for another trillion-dollar stimulus plan. You know, that from their own projections, it estimated that unemployment would be near 5% in the summer of 2012, and we just crossed under 8% for the first time in 44 straight months. And so that's the reality that those dollars, when we talk about stimulus, James, those are dollars not that any of us have here. Those are dollars that my children are paying for. And that's what politicians in Washington fail to understand, that the debt is coming from the wasteful spending that we're doing now. And the fact that we passed a trillion-dollar stimulus plan before and we still had unemployment of nearly 8% for 44 consecutive months, why would we think that that would work the second time around? And I think that's a clear contrast between my opponent and myself, is those wasteful spending dollars that Washington is taking out of my children's hands.
James, Ben knows better than this. Our failure to invest in infrastructure is one of the biggest problems we have with stimulating the economy. A study out of Texas A&M says that the hidden tax of failing to address our crumbling infrastructure costs us all $100 billion a year in transportation delay that keeps businesses from shipping their products to where they can be consumed, keeps travelers from getting to their destinations on time. I had the opportunity growing up to work on infrastructure for the Powsheik County Secondary Roads Department. I worked on bridge crews for 4 summers. I learned the value of investing in infrastructure because it creates jobs that can't be exported overseas. It keeps that money here in the United States. We have a lot of talented people who could be working on those infrastructure projects. Equipment operators, laborers, engineers, the best and the brightest people who have talent and training that they can get those skills in our community colleges and in job apprenticeship programs. We need to find ways to put them to work. One of the biggest problems we have, for example, with expanding wind energy in this country is we don't have the necessary infrastructure. I was proud last week to introduce a $40 million grant here in Iowa that the Iowa Power Fund is going to use to move forward with a new smart grid technology that will help us move that power around the state and also around the country. Those are the types of smart infrastructure investments. They're not stimulus. They're much-needed investments that are going to put people to work, strengthen the middle class, and make this a better country.
Ben Lang, a brief response to that?
If I could. As you noticed, the congressman here has talked about back to work and tax credits and Obamacare. But if you take the time like I have to talk to small business owners out in the street, they aren't making decisions on whether to hire new employees based upon some governmental program that the congressman is proposing. They're making decisions because there's a market demand for their product or service out there. And when he's supporting policies like Obamacare that is going to necessarily increase taxes on all of us, on those small business owners out there, that's what's cutting the legs out from underneath of them. So you can't, in one hand, talk about a governmental program that's somehow going to create jobs, and at the same time turn around and vote for policies like cap and trade, Obamacare, increasing taxes. That is what is gutting the working class here in Iowa.
Well, I want to respond to that because he's just laid out a lot of information there. And what he fails to mention is that small businesses were being priced out of the health insurance marketplace long before Obamacare came along. That's why they were dropping employee coverage for their employees, and that's why we ended up with 50 million Americans without access to health insurance. We need to talk about practical solutions to these problems rather than turning them into political footballs.
Okay. Still on the topic of perhaps stimulus related to the debt limit, the deficit. James, do you have another question in that area?
Sure, Ben.
Area?
Congressman Braley, you voted several times, I think 6 times, to raise the debt ceiling limit. Excuse me. And it looks like we might be headed that direction again. The nonpartisan Congressional Research Service says it would take massive cuts in spending, perhaps increasing federal revenues by 2/3 or some combination of that to avoid raising the debt limit. What actions would you support to avoid raising the debt limit ceiling, and would you be comfortable in any conditions of raising the ceiling again?
Well, James, it takes courage to serve in Congress, and sometimes you have to do the tough things even though they might not be politically popular. I make my decisions based on what's right, not based on what's popular. And one of the things that I did was I broke with my party and demanded that the president offer a deficit reduction plan at the time we voted on the last debt ceiling increase. And that was part of the grand bargain that led to the creation of this sequestration system that I voted against. So one of the things that Congress has to do is do its job. That's why I support the No Budget, No Pay amendment. That's why I also think we need to bring people together and get serious about targeted spending cuts and new sources of revenue to address this problem. But when a large segment of Congress refuses to discuss new revenues, even though economists say it has to be a balanced approach, we're never going to get there. That's why I work with colleagues on both sides of the aisle to come up with real solutions on how we can get this deficit under control. And one of the things that I know is you're not going to get it if you just sit there and yell at each other all of the time. And that's why developing personal relationships with people on the other side of the aisle is important. Like the person that who told me that he went back on his pledge of no new taxes. He called Grover Norquist because as a business owner, he realized we couldn't meet our mandatory obligations under the federal budget. That's an act of courage. And that's what we need more of in Congress if we're going to get the deficit under control.
If I could respond to that.
Ben Lang, a response. Yes.
James, I think that is an excellent question, and that is what is at the forefront. You know, I've traveled over Iowa 100 times around here, and that's what everyone is talking about, is what are we going to do about the national debt? And as you mentioned, my opponents voted 6 times to increase the debt ceiling limit. And when I started out this conversation here today, I talked about saying one thing and doing another. And when he went into office, saying that the national debt is his priority, but he votes 6 times to increase it, and then the stark contrast is he says he's for a balanced budget amendment, but he votes against it on the House floor. That's what has working-class Iowans. That's what we are tired of. And what it comes down to is I also agree that signing pledges for special interest groups and not being able to talk about these problems, that's what's going to impact my 3 daughters. That's what's going to impact their generation. As you know, James, that's why we talk about 3 ways of solving this problem. There's tax cuts. There's cutting and spending. There's tax increases. And then there's also the third option of growing the economy. And I'm one that believes that this next generation, our generation, can grow this economy so America can be the most free and prosperous country in the history of the world. But we can't do it when we have members of Congress that are saying one thing and doing another and constantly increasing the credit card bill that my daughters have to pay off.
James, the balanced budget amendment that he claims I didn't vote for, most economists will tell you would have either sent us into a recession or would have caused a huge calamity in the worldwide economy. That's because it didn't have a balanced approach over time so that it wouldn't create unnecessary pressure on the recovery, which is still in process. And that's one of the reasons why I voted against it. Also because it made it much easier for us to go to war and spend money outside the federal budget, a practice that I oppose, and make it more difficult to get disaster assistance to places like the ones I represented in Parkersburg and New Hartford and Independence and other communities devastated by tornadoes and floods and ice storms. That's why I voted against the balanced budget amendment and why I am a sponsor of a different balanced budget amendment introduced by a Republican congressman, which would spread that out and would cause less stress on the economy.
We've got a minute or two before we have to take a break. Mr. Lang, you've said that you would not sign the no new taxes pledge put forth by Grover Norquist because you said you didn't want to hamper your ability to compromise on the issue. So can you tell us specifically what tax increases you'd be willing to entertain? You want to reserve that right.
Well, what I said is I want to reserve the right to talk about the solutions. And when we talk about no new debt ceiling increase limits until there's a deficit reduction strategy in place, because I've talked to Iowans all over the state, and they will tell you, Ben, we have to solve this national debt crisis. And I may be willing to help with that problem if I knew that politicians in Washington would actually take the dollar that we send in there and they pay down the debt. But as you've seen before, we have trillion-dollar stimulus plans. We have 4 consecutive years of trillion-dollar deficits. There is no real solution when it comes to members of Congress right now about actually taking the dollar that's sent to Washington, D.C. and paying down the debt. And this is, again, just in full frankness, my opponent has been a part of that, and that's part of the problem. We need people there that are concerned enough about it, that aren't willing to sign pledges to appease special interest groups, but are really willing to talk about those issues.
Gentlemen, we have to take a short break.
Well, when we come back, I want to respond to that because I never got a chance to.
We'll let you do that. Congressman Bruce Braley with us, his Republican challenger, Ben Lang, vying for the right to serve Iowa's 1st District. This is a special edition of Politics Wednesday. Also along with us, James Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette and Iowa Public Radio's Pat Blank will get in here with a few questions as well. You can join our conversation, 1-866-780-9100, if you have a question for our candidates. Email us, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. We're also on Facebook, or tweet us at IPR Talk. I'm Ben Kiefer, back with more of this special edition of River to River, Politics Wednesday, in just a moment. This is Iowa Public Radio News. And we're back with more of this special edition of River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. It's Politics Wednesday, a special sort of Politics Wednesday today. We have in our studio in Cedar Falls U.S. Congressman Bruce Braley of Iowa's 1st District and his Republican challenger, Ben Lang. We're talking to them about a variety of issues less than a month before Election Day. We'd like to ask you to join in our conversation, 1-866-780-9100. Also here, joining in to help the asking of the questions, James Lynch of the Cedar Rapids Gazette and Iowa Public Radio's Pat Blank. When we took that break, we were on the topic of the debt limit, the deficit, and we promised Congressman Braley a short response to Ben Lang's comments. Let's do that now.
Well, Ben, before the break, you asked Ben Lang a very specific question, and you didn't get an answer. You asked him, what tax increases would you support? So I want your listeners to know what tax increases Ben Lang would support. He has proposed changing our tax code to a two-tier system that would result in an increase in taxes on the middle class and tax cuts for millionaires and billionaires. And you don't have to take my word for it. You can take the word of the Tax Policy Council, which analyzed this same proposal based on a similar proposal made by Paul Ryan and said it is not mathematically possible to design a revenue-neutral plan that preserves current incentives for savings and investments and does not result in a net tax cut for high-income taxpayers and a net increase for lower- and middle-income taxpayers. So that's the answer to the question that you asked.
Okay, we can go round and round quite a bit on this. If you have a very short response, the question was, would you be able to – what tax increases would you be willing to entertain? And please keep it short. We do want to move on, Ben Lang.
I will keep it short. And the question is, which ones we would keep open? We keep open all of them to the discussion. But the point is that somebody's got to have a plan. President Obama has a plan. Mitt Romney has a plan. Paul Ryan has a plan. Ben Lang has a plan. But Congressman Braley's been in office for 6 years, and he still doesn't have a plan. That's the difference, is we have the guts to put ideas out there to solve these problems. And I think that's what voters really need to know about when they make the decision in November.
Okay, let's go to Pat Blank of Iowa Public Radio. Pat, okay. What did you want to launch into here?
Let's move on to health care. Mr. Lang, polling has demonstrated that while the public doesn't have a favorable opinion overall of the Affordable Care Act, certain provisions, such as requiring insurance companies to cover pre-existing conditions and allowing young people to stay on their insurance for their parents, are popular. And Mitt Romney has even embraced some of these provisions. So are you willing to support some kind of health care reform if Affordable Care Act is repealed?
Well, yes is the answer, is we are willing to support some of those provisions in there. When you talk about pre-existing conditions, allowing children to stay on their parents' insurance till their age of 26, I think those are good ideas with it. But what you have with Obamacare is you have taxes that are going to be implemented to working-class Iowans. They estimate that 75% of the mandate penalties through Obamacare are going to come upon the working class, families making less than $120,000 a year. You talk about altering the doctor-patient relationship with the Independent Payment Advisory Board, unelected board of bureaucrats that are really empowered to make decisions on how we are going to control costs in the healthcare industry. That, to me, is the concern when it comes to Obamacare. I've spent hours with physicians all around the district, and in fact, we just had a couple of them a couple months ago in the Cedar Rapids Gazette talk about the impact that the Independent Payment Advisory Board and the cuts to Medicare is going to have on senior citizens' ability to access health care. The cold, hard facts is $716 billion has been taken from Medicare, and you can spin it, you can cut it, you can put any type of political spin that my opponent wants to put on it. But when you take funding away from it, you are restricting access for senior citizens to their health care benefits.
So would you support a voucher system?
No. And in fact, I know that's the political word that everyone wants to use with it. We talk about having the support behind the purchasing power of the federal government behind senior citizens so they can choose the type of health care plan that best fits their needs and also allow them to have that opportunity to have the same old fee-for-service plan that they are currently used to. But really, the real key, Pat, is that we are talking about my generation making these choices, because even after the congressman's plan of Obamacare coming into action, even after that, the chief actuary of Medicare has said that Medicare will be insolvent 10 years from right now. So either our generation steps up and solves these problems, or we just kick the can down the road. And I think that's the difference between the two of us. We're willing to discuss these solutions and how we can solve the problem.
Congressman Braley, what if these promised savings for the healthcare system aren't realized? Then what happens?
Well, first of all, let's talk about the lie that $716 billion has been cut from Medicare benefits. It's a lie, because what we did was we improved the solvency of Medicare by 8 years, something that a lot of people care about. And Ben has talked about his father being Medicare eligible. You would think his father would be pleased with the fact that Obamacare extended the solvency of the program by 8 years. And Ben was an employee of Congress when his boss voted to pass a Medicare prescription drug benefit and didn't pay for it that exploded the deficit that he also professes to be very concerned about. And in that bill, Pat, they prohibited the federal government from negotiating lower drug prices with the big drug companies. Guess what? That $716 billion in savings came from bringing the big drug companies to the table and getting $100 billion in concessions that allowed us to close the donut hole that benefits people in that same Medicare prescription drug program. We also brought the big insurance companies to the table because we had been paying 12% more for private Medicare plans than we pay for Medicare, and that was costing taxpayers dollars and not getting corresponding improvements in benefits. And I thought Ben was concerned about runaway health care costs because this is his plan on reforming health care the right way. And he wrote in there that he was concerned about rising costs making it more difficult for Americans to afford access and services. He talked specifically about the cost being because of overutilization of services. This is what I talked about during the health care debate. And he also misled the listeners because this wasn't a bill crammed through in the middle of the night. We debated this bill for 18 months. I did 17 town hall meetings in my district. We had countless hearings. It was the most analyzed, most debated, most discussed, most scrutinized bill in the history of Congress. So to claim it passed in the middle of the night is disingenuous, and it's not true.
It must not, not have been scrutinized too much. We found out a tax was in it 2 years later, so they couldn't have read it too thoroughly.
Ben Lang and Congressman Braley, you've each had 2 minutes on that. I'm going to move on now. We have a lot of other topics to get to. You've each had 2 minutes approximately on that. We want to get to our callers as well. We have numerous callers with questions. David is with us in Decorah. Decorah, part of the 1st District for which these candidates are seeking to represent. David, good afternoon. Welcome to River to River.
Thank you for having me.
Your question, please, sir.
Well, I'm concerned. I just recently retired. I have children and a grandchild, and I'm concerned how we're going to ensure that Social Security is preserved for generations to come. I'd like to hear information from both candidates, please.
Okay. Let's start off with you, Ben Lang.
Well, I think individuals out there, first of all, we are talking about the realities of the situation that Social Security has already started to run a deficit in 2010. So that's the reality that politicians have put Social Security in. And as I mentioned, you know, my father just turned 62. He's relying upon Social Security to be part of the three-legged stool for his retirement. And we know that as it's currently structured, we had 42 workers for every one retiree when it was put in place. We had a life expectancy of 58 to 60. The demographics have changed. And it's no more using it as demagoguery, no more being scared about talking about those solutions. Remember what they always used to say, the third rail of politics, you don't want to touch that issue, Ben. You can't go there. Well, we're not afraid to talk about it anymore because where it's currently structured is not solvent. And so what we talk about as all of us, as Iowans, why don't we have the same opportunities as members of Congress have when it comes to their retirement savings? You know, the congressman has a thrift savings plan that he can participate in that's administered through a federal agency, and they can choose the different types of plans that allow them to plan for their retirement. And as Iowans, we should have the same opportunities that they do. And we still allow the system where individuals can choose if they want to have the same Social Security plan that they have paid into, or if they want to have alternative paths. The difference is we are allowing consumers to choose the best way to plan for their retirement.
Congressman Braley, how does your plan to secure Social Security for future generations match up?
Well, David, to all those seniors at Mabe's Pizza in Decorah and the people who are about to be seniors and people like me who've paid into Social Security for 40 years, I'm very concerned about my opponent's radical proposal to cut off the third leg of the stool. Because what he just told you is he wants people to have a choice between contributing to Social Security or contributing to a risky private investment scheme. Give them the choice.
but he was an employee of the federal government, and he talked about that three-legged stool for his dad. That three-legged stool consists of Social Security, a guaranteed benefit, personal savings, and an employer-sponsored retirement contribution plan, whether that's a pension or something like a 401k plan or an IRA. That's what every federal employee, including him, had. That's the type of benefits that members of Congress have. It's the exact same program, and it's a three-legged stool. If you say choose between Social Security and its guaranteed benefits or cutting off that leg of the stool and investing in a risky private investment scheme, that is not the type of balanced retirement security that most Iowans I talk to want to have. And especially when we've seen how risky that stock market investment can be based upon what happened 4 years ago. So that's why I support doing what Ronald Reagan did when he came to Congress and they came up with a comprehensive plan to strengthen Social Security by looking at adjusting the maximum contribution limit, looking at the possibility of maybe whether we should means test for some of the highest income earning Americans who may not need that retirement security the way middle class and working people do. And that's the type of practical, pragmatic solution that will help preserve Social Security, which will not be insolvent until 2033, based upon the most recent report.
Ben Lang, brief, please.
Sure. How long are incumbent politicians going to try and scare voters out there using the terms radical and using demagoguery to try and attack people that wanted to solve the problems? The reality is Social Security has already started to run a deficit 2 years ago. And that's what we have to come and face the forefront. We are talking about preserving these programs, strengthening them, not using radical terms and demagoguery to try and scare voters away from supporting a candidate.
Okay, we have limited time. We want to move on. You've had both say in that. I think Pat Blank would like to venture into the field of agriculture with you.
No pun intended.
Of course not.
The Democratic Senate in June passed a five-year farm bill, as did the House Agriculture Committee. But the House GOP leaders refused to hold a vote on the measure. In the meantime, without a new farm bill, grain farmers can't plan for the future. They're trying to decide what to plant in the spring. Dairy farmers are without milk price supports. And the food stamp program is in limbo. Governor Romney was here yesterday, and he said it's the president's fault for lack of leadership. What are you telling farmers and other people who are dependent on food stamps on the campaign trail when they come to you and say, what are we going to do? And I'd like to start with Congressman Braley.
Well, Pat, my great-great-grandfather, George Washington Braley, walked to Iowa in 1855 looking for better farmland. Both of my parents grew up on farms during the Depression, where they learned about tough times. I spent my childhood working on farms and in grain elevators and hauling grain in a truck. So these aren't abstract policies to me. I have family members who are still farming. And that's why I was the one member of Congress who took the initiative to try to force a vote on the farm bill in the House, which is being held up by the same Republican leadership that will be in Cedar Rapids next week supporting my opponent, Speaker John Boehner. This bill passed with overwhelming support in the Senate, and you can't get the Senate to agree on anything these days. It passed with overwhelming support in the House Ag Committee. I did listening posts all over the district, and I talked to farmers about what I was doing to work across the aisle with Republicans and Democrats to try to bring this bill to a vote. It has profound economic implications for this state. It affects every Iowan. It is the most important economic bill to this state's future, and we can't even get it to a floor vote because of political fear on the part of the Speaker of the House.
Okay, but that was approximately 1 minute. 1 minute for you, Ben Lang, on that.
Yeah.
Getting close to the end of the time. That's why I'm jumping in here.
Obviously, growing up in rural Iowa, I understand the importance of the agriculture community. And, you know, my father-in-law is a farmer. I married a farmer's daughter. And, you know, to talk about agriculture policy is not just isolated in the farm bill alone. You know, there's, again, a clear contrast between my opponent on this. You know, that's why I'm proud to have received the endorsement from the Iowa Farm Bureau. The producers out there, the farmers out there on the ground that are saying we support Ben Lang for his candidacy because of my support of the agriculture community, namely free trade agreements, the ability of pork producers to sell their products to new markets. And my opponent hasn't supported a free trade agreement his entire tenure of Congress, namely the extension or the repeal of the death tax. That is the single largest contributor to family farms not being able to pass down to the next generation. And also a cap and trade bill that is going to necessarily increase taxes on those farmers out there. Those policies, we can talk in agriculture in a larger context, but when you're out there on the ground listening to farmers out there, and you hear the concern that they have on the congressman's policies, it's because of those votes that is impacting their livelihood and their ability to pass the family farm down to the next generation.
Well, once again, my opponent refused to answer your question, which is about what he's going to do to get the farm bill passed if he's elected to Congress. And I've already given you specific examples of what I'm doing. I'm proud to have been endorsed by the Iowa Corn Growers and the Iowa Farmers Union. And I'm proud of the fact that I'm trying to reduce the deficit. What my opponent wants to do is get rid of the estate tax, which would add another $500 billion to the deficit. It only affects about 6,000 people every year in this country of $300 million. It has very little impact on family farms. That's been established by Neil Harl, the chief ag economist at Iowa State. And there are lots of things we can do. That's why I've supported a reasonable extension of the estate tax that's going to preserve the family farms in Iowa. And that's what we should be talking about.
Okay, we've almost come to the end of the hour. Of course, we haven't reached the number of topics that we wanted to. Let's do this. Let's briefly address the job approval in Congress and then move on to your closing statements. The average polling of Congress's job approval rating shows less than 14% of people approve the job Congress is doing. First, Mr. Langen, please do be brief, half a minute if you could. Why do you think this is?
Well, I think it's only 14% because some of the congressmen have spouses and they approve of them. I think the rest of America disapproves of what Congress is doing. And that's just not coming from Ben Lane. That's talking from all Iowans across the 1st Congressional District. And the reason for it is they have the inability to solve the problems. And as I pointed out before, you can talk about policies all you want. But till you have the guts to lay out ideas and solutions on how you solve these problems, there is going to be no fix to this. And it's my children. It's my children that are left holding the bag on this, and that's every member of Congress from both parties.
Okay, Congressman Braley, what about that? Do you bear any responsibility for this poor rating of Congress, given that you're a sitting member of Congress? What can you do to restore trust?
I understand why people are frustrated with Congress's inability to do things, but people also need to realize that Congress is a reflection of the people who send us there. And the American public is bitterly divided right now. When I grew up in Brooklyn, Iowa, when people had a problem, they didn't ask if you were a Republican or a Democrat. They asked for your help, and they got it. And that's how I approach my job. I'm proud of the fact that I work with the Republican chair of the Veterans Affairs Committee to pass the Andrew Connolly Veterans Housing Act that's going to provide benefits for wounded warriors, people like Taylor Morris and Christopher Billmeyer in Dubuque. I'm proud of the fact that I've worked with the very person who came to Iowa to recruit my opponent 2 years ago, a Republican from Georgia, to help Lennox get a problem solved that dealt with an unfair regulation. So I work across the aisle all the time. That's what people want from their member of Congress, somebody who can put aside politics and get things done.
Time enough, just time enough for our closing statements, and I'm going to shorten them a little bit from 2 minutes to 90 seconds for each of you. And because of the coin toss, Ben Lang, you will go first with your approximately 90-second closing statement, followed by Congressman Braley. Go ahead, Mr. Lang.
Well, again, thank you to Iowa Public Radio for hosting this. I do appreciate the opportunity, and I'm glad the congressman came here to share his views on this. This is really about a different vision for America because, as you've heard the congressman, he's very willing to criticize people out there with ideas and solutions. President Obama has a plan. Mitt Romney has a plan. Everyone has a plan. But the congressman. And that's why I think the difference that voters are seeing out there is we have the guts to lay ideas and solutions out to solve these problems because the policies that he's supporting, increasing the national debt from $29,000 a person to $53,000 a person, that is crushing Iowa families. Talking about gutting Medicare funding and that is going to restrict access to my father's generation's ability to receive the health services that they need. That is crushing Iowa families. Talking about increasing energy costs. That is going to crush Iowa families. So I hope voters out there have an opportunity to see that there is someone out there that has the courage and the guts to lay a plan out there for everyone to see. And look, I can't agree with my wife on every idea in the plan, but the difference is we need leadership in Washington. The idea that we can sit by and watch this happen for another generation and kick the same can down the same road, I think Iowans are ready to stand up and put a new generation of leaders in Washington. I look forward to that opportunity.
Okay, Congressman Braley, your 90 seconds. Go ahead.
Well, Ben, I'm a longtime listener and supporter of Iowa Public Radio, and I hope everyone listening takes advantage of the opportunity to continue to support Iowa Public Radio because of the important mission it plays in reaching every county in the state of Iowa. The streets of Washington are paved with plans that don't have any hope of ever being passed. If people want to know what I stand for, they can look at the votes I've taken. They can look at the legislation that I've introduced and have successfully gotten signed into law. It's a long list. It's a history of working across the aisle to solve tough problems and get things done. But my most important job is a member of Congress, and the reason I'm running for a fourth term is because I get to help people every day, whether it's constituent services of people who call me and need help with Social Security benefits that have been delayed for too long, or it's veterans who come home and I meet them in the intensive care unit at Walter Reed and try to offer hope and assistance to their family in their time of need and make sure that we live up to our commitment to giving them the benefits and services that they have earned representing us, to helping people who are struggling with small businesses get access to the assistance and the tax incentives so that they can survive and create jobs and put people to work. That's why this job is worth having. That's why I'm running for a fourth term. And that's why I'm asking for your vote on November 6th if you haven't already voted for me.
Okay. Thank you very much, Congressman Braley and Ben Lang, a challenger to serve the next term in the 1st District of Iowa in Washington. I want to thank you, gentlemen, very much, both of you, for coming into the Iowa Public Radio studios in Cedar Falls. Gentlemen, thank you.
Thanks, Ben.
We want to thank James Lynch, political reporter for the Cedar Rapids Gazette, for showing up and asking some great questions as well. James, thank you very much.
You're welcome.
And, of course, Pat Blank, my colleague, thank you for joining in with me to help out with the questions.
My pleasure.
River to River is produced by Catherine Perkins and production assistance today from Caitlin Fry. Cedar Falls, we had help here from Phil Moss, Tony Daner, and as always, welcome your comments and questions. Email us anytime, rivertoriver@iowapublicradio.org. River to River is a production of Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. Thanks for joining us.